Public radio is here for you. It doesn't matter how old you are, how big your home is, or what kind of car you drive. WOSU and NPR connect you to news and information in civil conversations. That's why 43 million Americans listen to NPR each week. WOSU is part of our community, covering and discussing issues important to you, standing with the facts. Meet the moment with WOSU. Go to WOSU.org/protect.
Good morning, I'm Christopher Purdy. Delighted to welcome you all to this edition of All Sides Weekend, where we discuss the arts and culture in Central Ohio. And I've got a Grand Slam program for you today, and each of my three guests have bios that run for 3 and 4 pages, so I'm editing as I speak. I will do my best. Jamie Goldstein is the Chief Creative Officer of GCAC, a.k.a. the Greater Columbus Arts Council, and one of their maybe their flagship event is the Columbus Arts Festival that's happening on the riverfront June 6th through the 8th. Jamie will talk to us about the Arts Festival and all things GCAC. Eric Gibson is here. He is on the faculty of the School of Music at The Ohio State University, running the opera department there. He is also the CEO and artistic director of Opera Project Columbus. They are doing performances in the Lincoln Theater of HMS Pinafore and Naughty Marietta. Eric is going to sing the entire score of both those shows for us as the program progresses today, in case I run out of things to say. And Zen Riggs is here. Mr. Riggs is the Vice President for Business Advancement and Chief Operating Officer for the Department of Athletics here at The Ohio State University. As such, he oversees the Schottenstein Center, the Nationwide Arena, the Ohio Stadium, and in partnership with the Wexner Center, the Mershon Auditorium. I'm taking a deep breath here. Go. No. Let's start with GCAC and Jamie Goldstein, because everybody looks forward to the Arts Festival. Everybody enjoys the Arts Festival, and everybody's exhausted when the Arts Festival closes. Mm-hmm. You must be tired now, because it's quite an endeavor to set that up. What are we having for the Arts Festival this year?
Oh, we're so excited. Thanks for having me here today, Christopher. We're so excited about the Arts Festival. It's our 63rd Arts Festival. All of the things that people love about the Arts Festival are back. We have 230 exhibiting artists from around the country. We have 4 stages of entertainment, great kids' hands-on activity area, your favorite beverages, and more than 40 food trucks. And I know Mother Nature is going to grant us with beautiful weather. This year, we're excited. We're bringing the fashion show back on Friday night, sponsored by Encova. And that'll be at 7:45 on Friday evening on Genoa Park. And then Saturday morning, Ballet Met is performing on the Bicentennial Park stage at 11 a.m. And we're so excited. We haven't had the ballet at the Arts Festival in a number of years. So it's another headliner for you. But we have a great lineup all weekend of performances, dance, music, theater, spoken word. And we can't wait to welcome people down to our beautiful riverfront.
And as we progress with our conversation, I just want you to just review for everybody, what is GCAC?
The Greater Columbus Arts Council funds artists and arts organizations throughout Central Ohio with public funds from the City of Columbus, Franklin County, OSU, and the Ohio Arts Council. We provide grants to artists, about $2 million each year to artists and a lot to many of our organizations, small, medium, and large throughout the City of Columbus. And we also host workshops for artists, provide services to our organizations that help them with fundraising and staff development. We produce the ColumbusMakesArt.com website, which hosts a public art database and an event calendar for all things arts in Columbus.
Talk a bit more about the Columbus Makes Art, because that's a wonderful campaign that's been going around for a couple of years now. And, you know, I kind of been around, but I'm learning a lot about people I didn't know before you featured them. That's great. So talk a bit about that
campaign.
Thank
you. We started ColumbusMakesArt.com in 2015, actually. I know time just like with time warp. and we featured artists for a number of years and profiled them. And we still do have an artist directory as part of it, but we really focus on helping people find events that they want to go to, whether it's free or paid, and find public art. GCAC has been engaged in a big effort for the past couple of years to develop a comprehensive public art strategy for Columbus and Franklin County.
What is public art?
Public art is anything that you can encounter outside on the street at 24/7. It includes murals, sculptures, landscape installations. Our database gives you all sorts of ideas to explore public art, and we have curated tours. We've started working with Adam Hernandez, who is pairing with artists around the city to select their favorite pieces, and we create short little videos, but he puts together a curated list of tours. We have neighborhood tours as well that people can explore, and we're really enjoying enhancing Columbus's image of public art, both folks' knowledge here and the amount of public art that we have in Columbus. We really want to make that grow.
So when you say artists, you're that's a wide patina,
every discipline, yeah. Every discipline, fashion, music, literature, dance, theater. We have seven primary disciplines that we fund in. But as you know, there are many sub-disciplines under all of those. So all artists are welcome. Filmmakers, all artists are welcome at GCAC to our funding programs and our resources.
Jamie Goldstein is the Chief Creative Officer of GCAC, the Greater Columbus Arts Council, the Arts Festival Downtown on the Riverfront, June 6th through the 8th. We will talk more about that as the program progresses this afternoon. This is All Sides Weekend on 89.7 NPR News. I almost said Classical 101. That's early in the morning. I'm Christopher Purdy. Zen Riggs is here, and as I read your bio, you're responsible for a lot of huge venues, including the Schottenstein Arena, the Nationwide Arena, the Ohio Stadium, and the Mershon Auditorium. How do you cover all that?
I have a great team and great support from the university, from the city, and Columbus has become known. It's now got a reputation of being a really good live event destination for artists and for fans and guests. We draw people, and not just our venues, but for the live events we do in Columbus, from virtually every state and many foreign countries. And so it's a lot, which is good. It wasn't really that long ago, when you think about it, that Columbus had no arenas, really. And now we're blessed with lots of good big facilities. And we are certainly, if not the top, but one of the top markets in terms of, I call it, live event seats per capita. We have a bunch, and that's a good thing. It's good for Central Ohio, good for Columbus.
Do you have a strategy of filling these venues, or if it's coming through and it looks good, you're going to bid for it?
Well, yeah. Our philosophy is we will host any event, with the only real consideration being safety. If we can keep the fans safe, the artists safe, the venue safe, city safe, then we'll do it. So anything, everything is game, and we think it's our responsibility to always try to attract and present a diverse lineup of events that's going to appeal to the broadest range of audience that we possibly can. Now, a lot of that in our world, a lot of that's just driven by what's commercially viable is the reality.
Butts and seats, that's the name of the game. Yeah.
That's exactly what it is. And events that can make the numbers work financially and otherwise, we have a good shot at. But we're never going to get everything. It's just not the way.
We get a lot, though.
We get a lot. We get more than our fair share. And part of that is the business has shifted over the years. It used to be artists toured to support their album. So they'd come out with an album, and they would tour to promote and market and support sales of that album. With all the streaming and all the services where they don't make as much money off of that, it's kind of flipped now to they make their money off of touring, which is good for us in general.
Years and years ago, many years ago, in another city, in another life, I worked for a big company that booked dance and booked symphonic events, big events. And Columbus, and I'm talking many years ago, Columbus was known as a great city to book into because it was on the way to Chicago. But I think that's changed now. I think Columbus is a great city to book into because it's Columbus.
I agree, but it's still geography still plays a role in it. I think Jamie, you may know the actual answer. I think we figured that 50% of the population of the United States is within a day's drive of Columbus.
Right. Yeah.
And so that certainly does help us.
Mm-hmm. Dan Riggs is responsible for some of our iconic venues here in Central Ohio, including the Schottenstein Arena, the Ohio Stadium, the Nationwide Arena. The Wexter Center is a partnership with Mershon. How does that work? How does that partnership work?
Well, we essentially act as a management company, if you will, for everything. So, you know, we manage Nationwide Arena really on behalf of the Blue Jackets and the CFA. You know, we manage Schottenstein Center on behalf of the university, Ohio Stadium really on behalf of athletic department, and then Mershon on behalf of Wexter Center for the Arts. So our job is to partner with them, utilization, fill the venue with events that's quite frankly helps their budget. That's where the funding goes for the dollars that come out of that. And then, you know, also just trying to energize this part of campus. As you know, Ohio State's invested a lot of money on this side of High Street where you live. And so bringing people and guests down here to fill the restaurants and facilities down here is an important task as well.
And shout out to Leo Welsh, hoping he's still singing for the Blue Jackets. Eric Gibson, speaking of singing, Eric Gibson runs an opera company and teaches at opera at The Ohio State University. How do you teach opera?
Well, you find a group of students passionate about music and wanting to communicate a good story, and usually that makes the magic happen. And I'm lucky enough that I have a lot of students in the Opera Project Columbus Ensemble this summer. So it's a good venue for them.
How is opera? Columbus, people may not know, has two opera companies, and plus universities and schools.
Sure.
Capital has one too. It has a wonderful, as does Ohio State. What is the difference between Opera Columbus and Opera Project Columbus?
Well, you know, my friend Julia over at Opera Columbus, I think they're focused on a lot of the classical repertoire from, you know, Mozart to Puccini to Verdi, and we're doing more of the comedic. More of the lighter things, you know, and that's not to say that's only the repertoire that both of those companies will do. I mean, she had a wonderful diverse season with Three Penny and West Side, and there was all sorts of wonderful things that they did this summer or this
West
season.
West Side Story, you couldn't get a
I know.
Couldn't get a ticket.
It's fabulous.
I know.
It's
wonderful. Yeah.
Amazing production. And so we're focusing on the lighter side of that repertoire, meaning
nobody dies.
I don't, that's right.
Wait a minute, I'm not sure.
In the productions we're doing this summer, that's correct, that nobody dies.
And nobody sleeps with their sibling because
right.
That's part of a Wagner opera. Look it up.
Yeah,
I didn't make that up.
Right, that's funny. But I think that, there, you know, we have to kind of look at when we produce our season, which Opera Project is concentrating on summertime. It's a time for that calls for lighter fare. You want to laugh. You want to get in out of the heat. And you want to enjoy yourself for, you know, about 2 hours. And so that's the repertoire that we are concentrating on. I guess Columbus Light Opera was an entity here well before
They were the first show in the restored Southern Theater.
Yeah.
That was the very first show.
Well before I got here. Yeah. But there are many people that love that repertoire still in town. And so I think, you know, last summer we did Pirates, which is a very
Pirates of who?
Pirates of Penzance.
Okay.
Yes. And that was immensely popular with the audience. So I think we kind of touched a nerve with an unserved part of the operatic or lyric theater repertoire.
We're going to come back and talk more about that. You're doing HMS Pinafore. I confuse my pinafores with my pirates, I admit, but I'm going to come and I'm going to learn. And Naughty Marietta, these are performances in June at the Lincoln Theater, the beautiful
June
Lincoln 8th Theater.
June 6th and 8th for Pinafore and June 13th and 15th for Naughty Marietta.
I was getting here. It's my show.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry, Chris.
We're going to take a break. We'll be right back with more of All Sides Weekend. Don't go away.
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you were going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money podcast from NPR.
Well, I don't know if they're crazy or not. One of the things we always say is after you've been in the live entertainment business for about 5-10 years, you're really not qualified to do anything else. So
same here. Yeah, same with radio. Right.
Be careful what you wish for. I think a lot of people, they want to get in an industry because they think they're going to hang out backstage with the stars and get a kind of run in that circle. The reality is it's work. It's a job like anything else. And I think, you know, when we bring interns, we bat about 50-50. 50% work first for a while, and they realize, I don't want to do this the rest of my life. And the other 50%, it gets in their blood, and they're desperate to do that. And we actually have a lot of alumni that have gone on to some pretty big jobs in the industry, working as vice presidents in different promotion companies. We have one that actually does all the booking up at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse that we compete with vigorously. So it keeps it interesting. But it is a fairly close circle. But you can get into it if you're willing to do anything and get your foot in the door and work hard. It is a nice career.
But you literally get your hands dirty, or some people working for you. It's physical work.
Sure.
Too. Yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's, everything from parking cars to making popcorn, to selling tickets, to guest experience, stagehands. It's a lot of different roles, different jobs that have to come together in a very quick order, because a lot of people don't realize these big shows that are 25, 30 trucks, they come in and set up in a day. They do their show.
A day. Because they really know what they're doing. Yeah.
And they got to get to the next date. And so that's the other side of the business. If you want to be on the road with one of these companies, that's a whole different experience.
My first job as an intern 100 years ago was ordering porta potties. That was part of it too. You know, I mean, and talk about necessary. That was a very important part of the job.
So true porta potty story. When you have the Rolling Stones, one of the writer requirements is you have to have a brand new, never used, pristine porta potty backstage for Mick.
Really?
Because he does a lot of running around, and he doesn't have time to go off someplace.
So that's got to be handy there. That's right. And Mick at his age can still run around.
He can have whatever he wants.
That's right. He can. Jen Riggs is here, Vice President for Business Advancement and Chief Operating Officer for the Department of Athletics. Mm-hmm. Talk about that.
Well, that's the other side of what I do, working with Ross on the, all the budget, athletic budget, the event management, all the facilities, capital projects, get involved with, a lot of the other daily, day-to-day operational kinds of parts and pieces, which is adjacent to the entertainment side, but very different.
Yeah, very different. This is All Sides Weekend, and I wanted to ask Eric Gibson, just review the dates where people can go and see HMS Pinafore and Naughty Marietta. Naughty Marietta, if you're my age, your grandmother might have taken you to see Jeanette and Nelson.
Right.
Okay. That's how people might know that.
Right.
So introduce that.
And they
show
also
too.
Might know it it's, if they know Young Frankenstein,
yes.
The movie Sweet
Mystery
of Life.
When
Madeline Kahn wakes up from her her date with the monster. Yeah. So the thing about GNS and operetta is there's lots of melodies that we know in daily life. I mean, like I think The Simpsons, they have lots of classical music references. And so when people come to a classic operetta, not only are they going to have a great time and nobody dies, that's the nice thing, typically, but they're going to go, I didn't know that that's where that tune was from, We are taking a little bit of a risk, an artistic risk this summer with doing two shows. Basically, we did one last year, Pirates, and so we're, by doing two weekends, we're essentially doubling our rep. There's no way to increase when you only do one show. Go to one to two, you're doubling. So it's a little bit scary, but two weekends.
But everybody loves Gilbert and Sullivan. For
yeah,
playing.
I think so. And so based on the response of last year, I think that we really hope people come to see the late spring, early summer season of both HMS and Naughty Marietta. And you wanted me to remind you the dates. It's June 6th and 8th and June 13th and 15th. The Friday night shows are at 7:30 and 3:00 matinees.
So what you do is you go to the arts festival and you walk around, you have a great time with that,
right.
And then you go to the air-conditioned Lincoln Theater,
right.
And you put your feet up and get a cold
right.
one or something from the bar,
right.
And you enjoy
right.
Gilbert and Sullivan, or who the hell wrote Naughty Marietta?
Victor Herbert.
Victor Herbert.
Right.
Thank you very much. I actually played
Make
him
an
in
arts day of it.
Right.
Exactly.
Well, I was thinking, when we sat down, I went, oh gosh, our dates are the same, but the truth of the matter is when people want good art, they just want more of it.
Yeah.
So 100%. That's really great to say.
They'll do both. They'll make a day of it. They'll make a weekend of it.
Absolutely.
Where do you find your singers, designers, costumers, orchestra, mm-hmm. conductor, all that? Where do they come from?
Well, Bill Boggs is conducting. Of course, he's local and knows is familiar to many people. Our cast is almost entirely from Columbus. So we have people like Bart Smith, Kate Merriman, Ben Bunsold, Andrew Levan, Carolyn Redmond, people who are familiar to
Ben
Columbus.
Bunsold has four kids. He's happy to get out of the house.
I bet so. Yeah, he's very happy in rehearsal.
he's a wonderful tenor.
Yeah, yes, tenor. Amazing.
And his kids are gorgeous.
Amazing. And so we have students and, shall we say, part-time professionals, mm-hmm. adults in the ensemble. A lot of the students are drawn from, obviously, my program at OSU, but then the other wonderful programs in town, Capital, Otterbein, Ohio University, other places throughout the state.
So this is fully staged, mm-hmm. fully directed, choreographed, mm-hmm. orchestra.
Yep, live orchestra.
Sets and costumes and the whole deal.
One person coming in from out of town is our designer, Adam, who's doing the sets. He comes from Chicago. No, New York. Excuse me. He used to live in Chicago. He's from New York.
This is Opera Project Columbus. Yeah. All you need to do is come to the Lincoln Theater and be prepared to have a good time because you will. And I suspect
you will have a wonderful time.
Last summer when I went to the Pirates of Penzance, people were singing along.
Yes.
People in the audience were singing along. So that was fun, too. Jamie Goldstein, I want to come back to you and GCAC. There is controversy. There is the ripples in the land over arts funding. You are an arts funder. That's what your organization does. It's the bed tax, first of all. Is that correct?
Yes. Bed tax is part of it, and then also the ticket fee.
Just what is the bed tax?
So the bed tax is a tax that's applied to people who come in town and stay at our hotels.
Okay.
And that is – GCAC gets a portion of that. A portion goes to Experience Columbus and the Franklin County Convention Services Center, and a portion goes to Human Services.
Are you having any difficulty with funding sources, as this report has been reported all over the country?
We do not get National Endowment for the Arts funding. GCAC does not. Now, we do get Ohio Arts Council funding.
And they get
NEA funding. And I think we have yet to see the full devastating effect of that. But we do have arts organizations here in town like Ballet Met and the Contemporary Harmony Project who all got all of their NEA grants were canceled after they had been awarded. And Opera Project Columbus.
Opera Project, too.
And that's a devastating effect for an organization that has already put in time investment into creating a production. And
you spent the money. You were told you've got the money. You spent the money. Yeah.
I think it's important to note that there's an ecosystem that exists. Zen and Eric both touched on it, right? An ecosystem that exists not just in the funding sphere. So if you have multiple sources of funding, you can be more stable, which is what GCAC really benefits from. Having those multiple sources makes our funding more stable and enables us to be a more accessible grantor to organizations. But the ecosystem that we feed by supporting nonprofit arts organizations plays into this appetite for arts that bleeds over into the shows that Zen produces. It supports a workforce, as Eric said. Mm-hmm. I mean, when we fund the arts, we fund human services. Many of our organizations have great partnerships with our human services organizations. You fund education. Our education programs that the GCAC grantees do in Columbus Public Schools and others are
wonderful.
Absolutely fabulous. Mm-hmm. And we also fund workforce development, economic development, and tourism, right? Our organizations like Ballet Met, mm-hmm. people come from all over to see the Nutcracker each year. The Broadway series shows that Kappa produces.
I think it's said that every dollar that's invested in the arts produces seven.
We're working on some updated stats on that, but we do know that the economic activity impact from the for-profit and nonprofit creative sector is $7 billion a year in Columbus. So that includes Zen's efforts. That includes everything that GCAC funds, and the support for the nonprofit sector also enables our organizations to do non-revenue generating programming like education, like Free Access for All, which grew 22%. So we've been able to increase our grants to arts organizations through the implementation of the ticket fee. And from 23 to 24, 22% more free activities were made available through the organizations that GCAC grants funds to.
One thing, though, that GCAC has always been wonderful at, and God bless you for it, is is DEI. I mean, you know, you are funding people. If somebody who knows thinks that this organization, this talent, this effort needs to be funded, they get funded. It doesn't really matter what their background is, but there's a wide umbrella of in the city that is serviced. Are you getting any blowback from that?
We're going to keep on our mission, right? And our mission is to make the arts accessible to all and to embrace all art forms and artists. We have this great program that was started a few years ago called GCAC Navigators. And we have 27 GCAC Navigators. They speak 8 languages. They represent all art forms. And they are our ambassadors into the community to help reach more artists. They helped artists achieve $540,000 more funding through their efforts over the past few years. And we love our navigators because they're out in the community in a way that we can't be while we're in the office working and planning and processing grants and producing the arts festival.
You know, we have a tight housing market here. And one of the reasons for that is everybody wants to come and live here. And GCAC, I'm convinced, is a big part of that.
Thank you. When we have a fabulous creative environment,
right.
like you said earlier, once you have this taste of the arts, you just want to do more.
Yeah.
We need to support that.
Yeah, it's a good addiction.
Yeah, it is a good addiction.
We are talking with Jamie Goldstein from GCAC, the Greater Columbus Arts Council, and Eric Gibson is here from Opera Project Columbus, and Zen Riggs is here, and this is All Sides Weekend. I'm Christopher Purdy. Let's talk about commercial viabilities. And we're talking about nonprofits. We're talking about people who are involved in fundraising and funding sources. I'm thinking you don't have to do that because you're bringing in big commercial, wonderful attractions that a lot of people want to go and see.
Well, that's true. Our dynamic is a little bit different in that we're directly competing with other markets for these events. You know, we're competing
right.
with Cleveland and Pittsburgh and Detroit and Indianapolis, and people often ask, well, how do you know what shows you're going to get, or how do you get certain shows? And I always kind of tug in cheek say, well, there's like 8 factors. Money is one. Relationship, money. Can we execute the event and take care of the artists the way they want to know? Money. Walkout potential. Where can they make the most money? I mean, it really comes down to an economic kind of formula for them when they decide where they go. Routing figures into it a little bit. If they're playing Chicago and they got to get to Philadelphia, then we're more likely to get the date than if they're going from Chicago to Jacksonville. So some of that figures into it. But overall, it's competing with other markets. Who can sell tickets? They're going to go where they can sell tickets and make the most money. That's it. It's that simple. But at the same time, some buildings have a reputation for being able to take care of the artist and the promoter in very, very high level ways. Others, not so much. And that does play into it. So that does help us because we have a stellar reputation here in town. So,
how long are some of the riders in terms of pages?
they can easily be 50 to 100 pages,
and you have to. Somebody has to sit and read every line.
We do, and if we have a promoting partner involved, sometimes we get spoon fed a little bit at a time, and you know, because they're trying to figure it out. And it's the dynamic of the business has changed so much. You probably notice there's a lot more postponements and cancellations and movement around, which is very frustrating for everybody. But the dynamic clearly has changed, and we try to adapt where we can to keep, you know, our goal, you know, Jamie kind of alluded to it, but our goal is for Columbus to be one of the top, if not the top, music live entertainment markets in the country. And part of that is recruitment and retention for all the businesses and companies that want to come to Central Ohio. They want to see a healthy art scene. That's important to them when they're deciding where they're going to locate. So.
Well, I mean, I live in a neighborhood where I can hear the shows, some of them, you know, which is great, which I love. No, it's great, but I don't. There's not a lot of dark days.
Not a lot. Actually, when we kind of activated Mershon again, that helped, and we have a really good relationship with Kappa, who does a lot of those. But Kappa Theaters, which is great, they're so packed between the symphony and the ballet. It's hard to get dates, the Broadway calendar. And so, you know, that's helping to fill another niche where there were shows that just they couldn't find dates. And so that date availability is key.
Well, speaking of that, I haven't heard lately anymore about the new symphony hall that's being projected for the riverfront. I'll probably get in trouble, but I don't care. You know, that if you had a hall built for that with 1,200 or 1,300 seats, then you would have a sold out house for the Columbus Symphony every night, which is that number of seats is the model for concert halls that were built 100 years ago. That's what it was. Not 3,000 seat movie palaces where a full house looks like is a half a house. And anybody get any buzz of this venue being built? Or
We have a great need for a broader variety of spaces, the seat size, right? And we have a need for more rehearsal spaces and those kinds of things that arts organizations can access. And so that is a sweet spot, that 12 to 1300 seat space.
But can you make enough money with something that size?
Well, I think it would follow the model of the other Kappa venues, certainly. And that would be that it would be available, and the goal would be it's available to all the arts organizations. The symphony, it's the sweet spot for the symphony, but if it can be built in such a way that it can be usable by other arts organizations and have and also have additional spaces like rehearsal space, et cetera, that would be ideal.
And my understanding is they're really looking at some pretty innovative designs to do just that,
yes,
to make it truly multi-purpose. Because you're right, the symphony could go in there and fill up a lot of dates, but they can't fill up all the dates. So
right.
You got to rely on a bunch of other business. And so the space has to be adaptable enough to make that work. And I think that's the way they're thinking about it.
If you build something like this, there's no point in having a lot of dark nights. You want it filled up and used. So we will talk more about that as time goes on. But I just wanted to reintroduce that because we haven't heard about that for a while. That doesn't mean that it's not percolating and that people aren't having meetings and architects and funders aren't.
These things take a lot of time.
Ever. Mm-hmm. They take a lot of time. We will be back in just a moment. This is All Sides Weekend. Don't go away.
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you're going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money Podcast from NPR.
We are back for our final segment on this program, All Sides Weekend. I'm Christopher Purdy, here with Zed Riggs, here with Eric Gibson, here with Jamie Goldstein, talking about the Arts Festival, talking about Gilbert and Sullivan, talking about Mick Jagger, talking about all of the wonderful ingredients that make the cultural life in Central Ohio and make our community someplace where a lot of people want to perform, a lot of people want to live, and a lot of people want to visit. And it's large. A lot of it's due to the three people here in this studio. Jamie, let's just review, make sure people understand when the Arts Festival is, what it is, and why they should go.
Absolutely. So real quick, though, I wanted to harken back to something Zen said earlier about teamwork. You have a great team. It really, for all of us here at this table, it takes a huge team of people to pull off these events that we do. Those people are workers here in our community, and the arts are a business. Nonprofit is totally a misnomer because that's a tax structure, not a business structure. So whether you're in the for-profit arts or the nonprofit arts, you've got all of these creative individuals working for you and contributing to the economy around here. You know, and I can't go any further without acknowledging that for the Columbus Arts Festival, we could not produce the Columbus Arts Festival without all of the great vendors that we work with here in town and that we support, the artists that contribute, but also our volunteer corps and our sponsors. AEP Foundation sponsors it. We've got Bank of America and Battelle and other folks, but We have a coordinating committee of 100 people who works year-round on the festival, and then we have more than 300 on-site volunteers. We could not do the festival with that kind of teamwork because we're just a tiny staff, and we're so grateful to them for that work. And I just think, you know, being in the arts, and one of the reasons that I've stayed is because of that wonderful environment and that culture. The Arts Festival, again, ColumbusArtsFestival.org for all of your information, June 6th, 7th, and 8th. And my favorite thing about the festival is the smiles on people's faces. And I look forward to seeing everyone down there.
Is there a day you'd rather people go? Is there one day that's busier than the other?
I will tell you. So if you go to our website, you can pre-shop. If you're interested in jewelry or glass, you can browse our artist gallery and you can look for your favorite artists. And if you are an art buyer, I recommend Friday. Come down, get the best selection Friday afternoon if you can skate away. Or the crowds are probably the lightest, and the artists are, all full of energy and not exhausted like all the rest of us.
but if you want the funnel cake or the beer, you got to show up.
You got to show up. Yep.
And it's worth doing that. Does GCAC have a ticketing service for any?
No. Kappa runs ticketing service. Kappa has done some great efficiencies in helping our arts organizations with back end stuff, and ticketing is one of them. But they've also provided some HR services, et cetera. So we're all looking for ways to operate more efficiently and effectively, and GCAC has done a lot of that too, in processing grants electronically and some financial stuff that makes us able to stay lean and then really be have great service for our grantees and our constituents.
The GCAC.org?
GCAC.org about our grant and funding program.
Okay. So how would I get a ticket to Naughty Marietta or...
Or H.M. Spinafore. You can get on the Kappa website or operaprojectcolumbus.com. And there's a special code, WOSU, where you can save 25% on your tickets.
No kidding.
No, yeah. It's just in honor of you, Chris.
Oh, what should as it should be. That's wonderful.
Call
yes.
it the Christopher Purdy code.
The Christopher Purdy code, that's right.
These are in the Lincoln Theater.
They are in the Lincoln Theater, June 6th and 8th.
With a lot of local talent.
I would say probably 98% of the cast and orchestra are from the Columbus area. Hmm. Yeah, just a few people from out of town. But yeah, if you come to see one of our productions, you're going to see people you recognize on stage.
How did you decide to... It looks like the company's been rebranded in a nice way in terms of both repertoire and the look of it when you're looking at the ad spaces and things like that. How did that come about?
Well, I think any organization, when it changes leadership, when I took over, it was just a mission to, blow the dust off of it a little bit. And like I said, there's other organizations in town that are producing opera, and there wasn't one that was kind of tapping into that light opera repertoire, that vein of the rep. And so that's kind of, I think it comes from that. We're producing fun stuff, so our marketing should be fun.
It was hard to get a seat last year.
I think technically it was sold out.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is why you want to get your tickets now.
Get your tickets now. Give us the website one more time.
You can go on the Kappa website, or you can go on operaprojectcolumbus.com.
Four tickets to Naughty Marietta, and is it the Pinafore or the Pirate? Pinafore.
It is the HMS Pinafore.
What's the difference
Pinafore?
Between the two of them?
Between HMS Pinafore and Pirates?
Oh, there's a boat, and then there's people on the boat.
Well, that's a problem. Right? That sometimes is a problem with Gilbert and Sullivan. Sometimes they are formulaic, and people go like, they're all the same. But they're really not. I mean, they're really very fun stories that are all very unique. So,
Are the production values you're using more traditional, or are they more modern for this production?
Well, as I was saying, we're in one of the breaks. We're updating Pinafore, actually. So it's more of a 1920s vibe to give a little bit of...
little Downton Abbey there.
A little interest to the design and a little interest to the flavor.
That's
We've
cool.
updated the lyrics. Now, no matter what time... You do no matter what time period you do a Gilbert and Sullivan, usually you update the batter song.
Well, you can update the lyrics because they're all dead. There's no copyright.
I mean, right. So and there's little things about, HMS Pinafore was supposed to be poking fun at the Queen's Navy. Well, now, 1920s plus currently there's a king. So we call it the King's Navy. Mm-hmm. So, it is easier for us since these works are now not under any copyright. We can kind of change and futz things.
So is some of the I don't give it away, but I'm just saying, are some of the changes a little topical, shall we say?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Bart Smith, who's playing Sir Joseph, I encouraged him to push the envelope, and there's a few I know I'm not going to give it away. You have to come and hear his lyrics because they're very funny.
Come and pay attention.
We couldn't get through it the first couple. The first time it was.
He has marvelous diction, so it'll be crystal.
Every word, crystal clear. Yep.
Opera Project Columbus at the Lincoln Theater, the Greater Columbus Arts Council's Columbus Arts Festival. If I wanted to apply for a grant, if I were a painter, which I'm not, or if I had any talent, which I don't, but if I wanted to apply for a grant, how would I do that?
We have an incredible Funds for Artists program, which is on a brief hiatus right now, but will reopen on June 9th. And artists can apply for up to $1,200 to help market themselves, to build a website, to buy supplies, to do professional development. We really try and keep it as open-ended as possible. And it is one of the things that artists are citing as one of the reasons they stay, that they want to be in Columbus. The support that they're able to receive from GCAC can really make or break a career. We also have an artist projects program, and that will have another deadline later this year. And so artists can receive up to $10,000 and filmmakers up to $25,000 to complete a project that has some sort of public event component. We launched that program a couple years ago, and it's allowing artists to achieve their dreams, which is a wonderful thing.
So I apply for a grant for whatever, say I'm a painter or something, and I apply for a grant and I do the paperwork, everything. Who decides if I get the money? How is that decided?
It depends on the program. We have the grant applications are based on some pretty standard questions. For organizations, we want to make sure their budget is firm, that they're staffed appropriately, that they've got a season plan, those kinds of things. And our GCAC board, through our members throughout the community, helps select those folks. For some of our programs, there are juries that are put together of arts folks nationally. So the Amina Brendelin Robinson grant is one example of that. Our Artists Elevated grants, which are $25,000 grants that are available to artists, awards that are available to artists through a nomination process. So sometimes we assemble folks from outside the community, but we also recently launched a community review process, and that's for our artist projects. And we bring about 200 or so people together for a day. They get all the materials in advance. They review all of those wonderful projects that are, and trust me, it is really hard to make a decision based on the amount of funding allowed. They review those, they sit together at a table, they discuss them, and it's the community that's making the decisions on what they think artists should bring to life. And the impact that that's having, we wanted to demystify the funding process, right, for folks and help them feel more engaged. And every one of our community reviewers just says, this was the most wonderful experience. Mm-hmm. I really have a new sense of what it takes to be a grant maker. And thank you for illuminating the process for me.
How much money is available in a fiscal year to provide grants?
Last year, we provided nearly $23 million in grants to artists and arts organizations. And that is primarily thanks
in Columbus, because it's GCAC, not the state.
In Columbus, in Franklin County.
No wonder they want to live here. This is fantastic.
So we used to fall below our peer cities in grant funding and providing support to nonprofit arts, and now we're starting to surpass them. Mm-hmm. The ticket fee has done that for us in combination with the bed tax, and this is what we need to continue to make Columbus more attractive and continue to attract that talented and creative workforce, and also to prepare for our growing population, which we hear is going to be 3 million by 2030 or so. That also requires investment in our arts infrastructure.
Yeah, try buying a house here. It's hard. The
ticket fee money goes to Nationwide Arena to help support their maintenance. And we have now a capital expense grant program that helps our organizations fund long deferred maintenance things and make those critical infrastructure updates that keep the facility really friendly to people and prepare them for our a population growth.
Well, I mean, Eric Gibson, you moved to Columbus fairly recently.
In 2022.
So you came just as was it maybe during the lockdown or just as we were coming out?
Just coming out of opening the new building. Yeah.
So you're here now. How are you finding it compared to other communities where you've lived and worked?
I find Columbus, the arts community, to be very connected and supportive of each other. Just from sharing mailing lists, helping each other, to just calling and saying, "Hey, do you have this set of props?" Sure.
That's also not common in other cities.
How much are you going to charge? Oh, nothing. You know, I mean, and I feel the same way, is that we all need to, you know, pat each other's backs. I mean, we need to help each other out.
We're so collaborative here. Thank you for saying that.
It just seems like it's friendlier. Maybe there is a general sense of appreciation that we're all back doing what we do post-pandemic and that we're back in theaters. And
are we back? Have we recovered from the pandemic, audience-wise?
We're getting there.
That's a question for all three of you.
I think we're getting there. I'm not sure we're all the way back, but earned revenue is growing back amongst the grantees that we have. We're seeing that. I don't think we're quite back there. And there are some art forms that are still struggling a little bit. Mm-hmm. And generally, those are performance-based. And so...
Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic because, you know, during COVID, of course, artists couldn't really go out and perform either. So coming out of COVID, there was pent-up demand. It's almost like somebody fired off the gun and went, go, and everybody jumped to the road and toured. So we had a real boom for a couple of years. But it's more normalizing to pre-COVID now. But I think between the fact that artists have toured nonstop and they're pulling back, we're finding audiences are buying much later. And consumer confidence is down, so ticket sales are not on fire. There are a couple of exceptions. Comedy continues to just be crazy. People are just buying anything, everything. But music, they're buying fewer later. There are fewer tours, so we're seeing a pullback a little bit.
How far in advance do some of these big tours make their availability known to you?
It depends. I mean, it can be a month. It can be a year. It just depends on their personal preference, and a lot of them, you know, we have booked, but they're not ready to announce yet. But I think they're trying to figure that out too. What's the right on sale kind of cadence for their audience? And it's different for different, you know, older audiences. They want to make plans 6 months, 8 months ahead of time. Unless it's winter time, then they want to wait and see what the weather is going to be. Younger audiences are willing to pull the trigger a little further out. So artists are becoming more sophisticated. Data is continuing to be refined on how that's used and how they're looking at that, and they're making more decisions based around data, both in terms of their cadence of on sales, but also what markets they play. You know, they're looking at who's in the market that they think is going to buy a ticket. How much are they willing to pay for that ticket? And some are more sophisticated than others. We still have artists that just come in and just throw it up against the wall and kind of see what happens, but not many. That's rare these days.
And hopefully it'll work. Are we sitting in a hot market still?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think so. Like I said, it's kind of normalized to pre-COVID a little bit. So, but that's not just our market. That's across the board for big concerts.
As long as the big R word doesn't rear its ugly head, recession. So we're all praying that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
All right, we'll pray that doesn't happen. Zen Riggs is Vice President for Business Advancement and Chief Operating Officer for the Department of Athletics at The Ohio State University. Jamie Goldstein is Chief Creative Officer for GCAC, the Greater Columbus Arts Festival. Sell the festival one more time.
Columbus Arts Festival, June 6th, 7th, and 8th, columbusartsfestival.org.
What are the hours, by the way?
We open at 11 on Friday and go until 10 p.m. Artist booth often close at 9. And then Saturday is 10 to 10. Again, artist booth will close at 9. And Sunday is 10 a.m. to 5 p.m.
And the bridges are lined with venues.
The artists span both the Rich Street and the Main Street Bridge, and we're on both sides of the river, right along the beautiful Scioto Greenway, and we couldn't ask for a more perfect venue for the Arts Festival.
And if you'd like Young Frankenstein, you're going to love the new season of Opera Project Columbus. Sell me. Go ahead.
And our shows are recession-proof. If you go on the web now and use WOSU as your code to save tickets, save money on your tickets. H.M.S. Pinafore and Nadia Marietta. June 6th and 8th for Pinafore, and Naughty Marietta is June 13 and 15.
Where?
At the fabulous Lincoln Theater.
Yeah, I'm doing your job. Here we go. Thank you all very much. I'm Christopher Purdy. This has been All Sides Weekend on 89.7 NPR News. Thank you, senior producer Marcus Charleston. Thank you, producer Aaron Esmont Rabinowitz. Thank you, student producers Chris Corcoran, David Stein, and Colin Simpson, and Isaac Huck, with video production by the Ohio Channel. Thank you, Cameron Howard, for making it radio. Thank you so much. I'm Christopher Purdy. Thank you for listening. This is All Sides Weekend on 89.7 NPR News.